Party's over. That was No Thanks, doing Party's Over Now from Sarah's Question the Answer Premium this year. Sans issue femme-fronted tracks only released as part of a compilation. We heard Prince Gideon from the Nation of Yahweh doing Want to Be Connected from Micah's Music of Mind Control Premium. It's called, take a breath now, Uncle Mo's Trans-Elemental Energy Wave Dreckenschmutz. Tenger from their self-titled 2016 self-released record did Gill. Tara Jane O'Neill at the top of that set with Seeing Glass from her new one, The Cool Cloud of Okayness. My name's Scott. Thank you for being with me today. It's a lot of fun. This is Freeform Radio, WFMU in East Orange, WMFU in Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM. Online, WFMU.org. Here comes Hardy.
There's not enough room for my theme song because my show went long today, and so I sing this theme song for a miracle nutrition with Hardy White. It's gonna start tonight, right now, in a few minutes. Normally there's a different song. Again, today I went long. Well, hello, friends. Today I would like to talk about What's So Funny. That's my clever title of a show examining the nature of humor and jokes. Now you say, didn't Freud write a whole book about jokes? He did. Freud's great big book of jokes, subtitled Er hatte eine Hut. That's from an old Jewish joke. And he wrote this book analyzing what makes us laugh. And he said, it's because we're ridiculing monkeys or something like that. But it's a bunch of things. So I'm examining two books today, that one and Bennett Cerf's Big Book of Jokes, which was a huge influence on me. I don't know, a lot of children had that one growing up. And it had jokes in there like, this is not my house, is the one of them. A fella says to a child, is this your house? Says no. There's something like that. It was very funny, the way Bennett puts it. It's very clever. And also Freud has, he can take the joy out of a joke because it's Freud. Imagine someone telling you a joke and they're half their jaw is missing and they're still smoking and everything. And you think, this is not, what's funny about this? Now, you're not laughing now. So it's very difficult to get people to laugh, but it's very easy to get them not to laugh. So if you're somebody who is a complete, utter chronic failure, you should try to get people not to laugh and you will become a very successful comedian. This is called the flippity-doo or reverse psychology comedy. And it's what Lucille Ball would happen to her when she would try to perform with Ricky. She'd say, Ricky, put me in the act. And he'd say, no, it's a serious one. He had a funny voice. It's serious, sir. Serious one. I can't talk like that because he had adenoids. And he says, I don't know that you're going to be able to do it because a lot of people to be able to perform like that on stage need to be professionals. A lot of them are what they call triple threats, which means that they can dance, they can sing, and they are a danger to national security. So that would have been a lot funnier if I didn't have gum in my mouth, but I don't have gum in my mouth. Isn't that funny? As you get older, it feels like I have a sensation I'm chewing on something, but it's nothing. It's just my brain breaking down. The jokes that we tell, now they can be, comedy can be an attack kind of thing. You know, we laugh at people. Ha ha. And says, ha ha. And he's laughing at, and you can tell it's an accusatory or imprecatory or something laugh. And then there's the kind of laugh that we laugh when we're at an open mic stand-up comedy night and someone says something that's just absurd or uncomfortable and it just comes out instead of, you know, gas. I don't know. But there's all sorts of reasons that we laugh. There's something called laughing gas that just reminded me, nitrous oxide, which was used for ages as a party drug, and then someone got so high they stuck it in cream. And then all of a sudden they was a hey now, and they invented whipped cream, not whipped cream, but the kind in the can, which is lovely. Gosh, what did people do before that? You had to take the cream and had a pastry bag and everything, and then you had to huff this party gas, and oh, it was an ordeal. But now you don't have to do that. Everything's in a can. Cheese, which used to be, you have to buy a big wheel of it and cut it. And nowadays, I say nowadays, since the 40s or something, you can squeeze it out. Like you're expressing some sort of pus-filled abscess or something. I don't know. Gosh, I don't know much about medicine. Again, I'm better at making people not laugh. But only when I set out to be serious. Because I've tried to tell jokes. Ugh. What a wreck. One time I was telling jokes in a talent contest, and I was so worried I was going to forget the punchline that I told it to the audience ahead of time. I said, please, please, please remember this for me. So when I get to the end, you just all yell it out or something if I get hung up. And that works a lot. That's why a lot of rock and roll acts can keep going past their due date, because the audience just finishes the songs and everything. Because you'll see that, you know, and then the audience will go, because they know it and they're okay with the person who's in advanced stage of cirrhosis or something. Oh, bless everybody. I wasn't talking about David Cassidy, but it could be anybody. Oh, my goodness, life is a struggle. I realize that. It's both funny and not funny. Hey, that's funny. That's not funny. I have a friend who has a grim, well, it doesn't have to be grim, but it is, occupation. And he spends his days with multiple dying people in various stages of challenges for economically and everything. So, you know, it's not easy. It can be an awful, tragic mess, the end of one's days. Just like the beginning can, you know? There's all sorts of economic placenta that comes with the reverse birth of death. And so there's sometimes he will tell me about a scenario that is so impossibly sad that it just feels like the punchlines is going to be whatever the sad equivalent of is, the Aristocrats or something like that. I don't know what it would be. You tell this sad tale there. What do you call that? Circle of life. Because it's not a circle, really. You know, the end is all squiggly. I don't know what it is. It's some kind of symbol of what? I don't know. If we saw it on an alien spacecraft, we'd think that's one of their symbols. But it might not be. It could be a child scribbling. I learned that from the science fiction novel Roadside Picnic. You could misinterpret something. That's just their debris. You thought they're leaving all their technology. No, that's empty space beer cans or something like that. So all the things that we think maybe are magical, look at the stars, how magical they are. Do you know they're a type of feces created by these gas clouds or something that coalesce, and then I don't know, it could be. That might be a way if some creature sees it. And you say, why don't we see that creature? Because it doesn't want to lay around in its own scat. So we don't see the creature that poops stars, because it's going to be far away from us. We're just sitting in the cesspool, go, isn't it lovely? They go, you know, those are turds. Just because they're made of compressed gas, gravity. What is gravity? I've been looking, I've been examining it all my life. I'm just trying to grasp the dated version of gravity. Just give me Isaac Newton. I don't have room for Einstein. I'm not going to get there. Like if I was starting piano right now, I wouldn't get to Mozart. Right? I'm not saying that, well, you know, Mozart was like 2 or 3 or something when he did Baby Mozart. It was amazing. He was a prodigy, child who was professional. I think that's crazy. I don't have a sense of humor. I don't know what that is. People say, oh, you have a great sense of humor. I don't. I don't know what that is. Unless you mean I have a sense of conforming, which I absolutely do. And I think those who are feel the most threatened, high, strong, threatened people, immediately sense, can sense a crowd and go, I'll sniff out what they feel superior to. It doesn't have to be a person. I guess maybe in the old, you know, it's, oh, we can mock that weak person. But now, you know, it doesn't have to be a person. That you just, you sense the zeitgeist and then you mock, let's say, the way bacon is wrapped, which becomes the new, that's the new lowly caste, is, you know, things that are annoying. And that's how you do it without hurting anyone. And you say, well, you've hurt the bacon people or whatever. I don't know about them. I don't know if there are bacon people. Something in your imagination is like, when you said that, Hardy, I imagined a bacon person, like a bacon golem that looked like Gumby, but thick bacon. It could be. I remember when I was a child, I think there was a show like that, and I was wondering, how do they do that? Because the bacon's going to go rancid at some point. And Gumby was made out of, what was it made out of? Nobody knows. Someone told me mashed potatoes because it doesn't melt under the lights. But I don't know much about show business. Also, Foley, a lot of the Foley, that's the sound effect you hear, is also mashed potatoes. And say, how are there enough mashed potatoes? Well, think about it. You don't have to use edible kinds. So they use a synthetic mashed potato called synth mash in show business. And that's what you see, all the things that are ice cream. An acquaintance of mine, Johnny Pemberton, was in Ant-Man. And I'm in the first scene serving Ant-Man ice cream. And I thought to myself, Johnny, is that synth mash? And I have not seen him since because we're not, I could email him. I can email a lot of celebrities, a lot of people in movies. How is that? Well, my nephew works for a talent agency, and he gives me people's files, basically. No, I don't think that's true. Oh, my goodness. I wish I had a job where I could go through a garbage can and start the Drudge Report or something like that. That'd be beautiful. What kind of, just stuff sometimes just falls in your lap, like you're working a high-security government job, and you go, what the heck? This info is valuable. And that, I had an uncle like that who was working at the, what kind of laughter are you doing now, Hardy? It's uncomfortable and I'm embarrassed. But he was working at a hospital thrift shop, you know, where people donate stuff to the hospital and then the hospital sells it, you know, and they raise a little bit of money that way. So my uncle in his retirement was volunteering there, like repairing toasters. And he basically was just keeping the good things, you know, and he just felt like this was a lucrative side hustle. And I was trying to convey to him, like, what stealing was, but he didn't see it that way. He felt they were donating it to him, too. He was the hospital. They're giving it to him. He needs it. Whatever. That was interesting. So, my goodness, I need charity. I will help myself to this toaster. But the thing is, he was hoarding toasters. How many can you use? And even now, what a dated, it's a strange item. I don't mean to be observational. But there are few appliances in your kitchen that are more niche. I can't think of anything like that. Just basically does this one damn thing. And then people have tried to say, well, I'm going to make a product that fits into it. But that's after the fact, Mr. Pop-Tart or whatever. Now, Jerry Seinfeld's finally found something to make people laugh. Pop-Tarts. He doesn't have to use slander or whatever like he wanted to. God bless him. Something always happens. You can be clever like that. Work around it. Someone says, it's not funny to kick lambs anymore or something. You go, I'm going to kick something else. Fire hydrants or something. Not so that you can't use them in an emergency. My goodness. Now I might be laughing at you, Hardy, with the toaster stuff and everything. Or not with you. I don't know. My goodness. A little chuckle. That's worse than a laugh that people laugh at you. You go, is that an ironic? Are you laughing because, like, you're embarrassed for me? Or I don't ever know. Sometimes in the cartoons, you take whatever. There's no, you don't distinguish between mocking laughter and genuine laughter. I don't know. I don't really. I've always found it a little bit disconcerting because it just, if you've, you don't have to be super high to observe this, but look at a group of humans laughing hysterically. And then if you just keep looking, they just turn into baboons or apes or something like chimps or bonobos. And they're just teeth bearing between poo flinging. And it's scary to me. I don't want the pack doing that at me with the teeth. I don't even like it when it's automated monkeys, the ones that that play percussion. What is it? Cymbals. They got them doing all sorts of things. But the monkeys that would play cymbals and their teeth would chatter and stuff like that, and they would do this the whole time that children were starving worldwide. We had this wonderful battery-powered, teeth-bearing, mechanical monkey toys that were meant to amuse and disgust. I think there's a lot of toys like that. And the kids on the old toy ads were laughing a lot more than I was when I was playing with toys. I don't know that I had a giddy high the way the children in the ads seemed very excited about their toys. There was a veneer of malaise or something. I played with my toys with ambivalence. I've always been like that. I was a bit a tad depressive or something. I don't know. I think at one point, there's a picture of me enjoying some cold chicken on the patio or something when I was two and looking super happy. But then after that, I just look like, Oscar Levant or something, but a child. Who's that, Hardy? I can't think. Who's somebody who's a bummer now? I don't know. My gosh. There's always some neurotic performer whose thing is, I'm sad and have self-loathing. I don't have self-loathing. I don't think. I might. I feel like that's other people's responsibility. I think loathing doesn't seem like something. You don't have to put self in front of everything. Some things you can have done, right? You know, everything self-serve and all like that. No, that's not a thing. Serve yourself. Then you're not serving. I don't mean to be like particular, but really a lot of times they just throw these prefixes. You can tell that they don't belong there if there's a hyphen. Then you know, like, hey, what? Hey now, wait, are you coining this? You know, you can't pre everything or whatever, counter everything. And so they know that. And they're trying to be clever by doing a flipperoo. And don't be impressed. Oh, I want you to, what are your motives? Even if I were trying to make you laugh, why? Think about it for a minute. Well, you wanna be liked or something. Yeah, but to what end? I think that every time that I look at my bank account. I don't want you to give me a dollar every time I make you laugh. That's upsetting. I even think the people in that profession, bless their hearts. It's strange. Making people do that for a living. It's just like making people have hiccups for a living or something, which I think some restaurateurs do, I suppose. You can do it. There is no involuntary reflex that maybe somebody doesn't have a profession stimulating. I'm trying to think. Hiccups? No, maybe. Yeah, we said that one. Sneezing? There's a YouTuber who gets you to sneeze. I don't know if that's true. They always say, look up at a bright light if you need to sneeze. And why? And that they started that in the 80s because everybody had ceiling fans. So the minute you look up, you get a puss full of this dust that accumulates on the blades of the ceiling fans, and you sneeze. And then someone said, oh, I thought it has something to do with light. And you go, that doesn't make any sense. Why would something going in your eye make your nose itch? No. It's a dust off of ceiling fans. And now you know. Ba-dum-boop. I stole that from Reading Rainbow. You should read too. I do. Ba-dum-boop. Everything needs a stab. I think that's called a stab. I'm doing it with my mouth because I don't have time. I have it as a sound file somewhere. But I don't know, how much does it really add?
A little bit. It takes it from a B minus to a B show.
Okay, I'll look for it later. Put it in, I promise. It's in the archive version. Rim shots are good, too. They don't use those anymore. You don't need those. People know when to laugh. And laugh tracks? I've used them before. And I don't know. Did you ever go somewhere? I used to go to some old people's houses. Old fellas, usually. Not living alone. I would go, why? They just have me in. There was a sign that said candy or... No, like old relatives or something, and you go to their house, and someone had given this poor old chap a Dymo label maker. I've discussed this before, but he suddenly saw labels or a need for them everywhere, and it's almost like some kind of living will or no ethical will or something. That's what it is. It's an ethical will. He decided I'm gonna leave my thoughts about everything. Like this window, but, you know, keep closed. Or this light switch, you know, leave on. Just a series of wishes typed out on tapey strip. And affixed to things. Little signs everywhere. Friends, do you see signs everywhere? That's good. That means you're having a wonderful... Perhaps having some kind of manic episode and you're going to do great art briefly before plunging into despair. I'd seize it now. Do some paintings or something. What kind of signs are you seeing, Mr. Blake?
Ooh, wowie.
I'll get it all down. That's what I feel like whenever I get excited about something. Jump on it. That's why I have jokes. I get serious. I want to become serious about it, maybe, and go to comedy school. And let me take you now to what a comedy school might be like. I watch a lot of old Johnny Carsons, and sometimes he'll have comedians on, and, you know, they fawn, and they're just absolutely, they overflatter, they're sycophantic. And they give these hyperbolic introductions, and they make comedy seem like a blood rite, or like you inherit it, like a gift from God. Because they'll say things like, you know, you can't teach comedy. You know, you can't teach someone funny. And this next guest is just a really funny person who has stolen most of his act from other performers. I don't understand the whole you can't teach funny. Like, they're giving them too much credit. I say, yeah. First of all, A, person's not funny, in my opinion. B, yeah, you can. That's the whole thing. It's nothing but learn. You don't drop out of there. Oh, look at that baby's making all sorts of witty observations. It doesn't even know it's making us laugh. Well, then it's not funny then. You know, you're just an object of ridicule or something like that. Funny is when you're trying to make people laugh, and then you do. Now, you can do that all sorts of ways, and some of them are sad, and we feel, I'm going to tie this to the last show, you know, sympathetic mortification, as my friend used to call it. Feel cringy for them. Oh, you feel that way for me. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, you're embarrassing me.
Oh, I haven't begun. I wish you were my child.
I'm older than you.
Yeah, that'd be great, though. I'm a time traveler. It could be. I'd take you out somewhere and embarrass you in public by doing things that are completely and utterly benign, very, very subtle. Only you would notice them. And then I would provoke in you a reaction, and they'd go, why is he treating that old man so badly? Why is that older man treating that slightly younger man so badly? That's his father. And that's because I've gotten to you. Oh, my goodness. Is getting somebody's goat. That's a profession. Goat getters. What if you're the greatest of all time goat getters? You could be. You don't want that. Oh, what if you brought joy to people? What about comedians who brought joy to millions, but pain and sadness and emotional abuse to their intimates? Are they funny? Is that funny?
Is that funny?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what's funny. That's not funny, Herr Huffredum. What's that mean? It's not funny, Herr Huffredum. I just learned to do that. It's a bad word backwards. You're running to your reverse speech there. Call people that. You go, thank you, Herr Huffredum. And they won't know what you're saying. And I'm backwards speaking naughty words. If time reverses, I'm going to get kicked off the air when the arrow of time reverses. But anyway, I'm really quoting, that's not funny, which I think is Run DMC. And then they list some things that aren't funny. You know, don't do these things. And a lot of them are directed at future YouTube pranksters. But they go, that's not funny, Herr Huffredum. And there are things that aren't funny, maybe tended to be. You know, if it's at someone's expense, I don't want it to be at my expense. Who wants that? Look at that guy just lost all his money. Wait a minute, that's my expense. You don't want that. Oh, so what do you do? Oh, you don't want to be laughed at. What if they're laughing at you and you don't want to be laughed at? Well, take off your pork pie hat and shave that beard. No, I don't know what you're doing to be. It could be nothing of your own fault. Someone's laughing at you because you're just expressing yourself. And that, and I'm telling you, it's hard. Laughter is not the best medicine if there's too much of it, or you pour it on your, you can put it in the wrong place, I guess was what I'm saying. Don't do that. Don't put it in the wrong place, the medicine, the laughter medicine. Reader's Digest, which is a repulsive name, but I'm bless their hearts. We don't really use that word as a synonym for abbreviation anymore. We usually use it to eat when we eat something and we suck all the nutrients out of it with our guts. But Reader's Digest used to be a company that would sum stuff up for you. So if you didn't have time in a busy society where there's just too much to read, they'd give you a little magazine, summing it all up, first of all, and then they'd give you a series of books, like with the middle pages all torn out. This is the industry. I tried to get a job with them one at the beginning of the World Wide Web. I was like, I'll do some website for you. What is the site of the web kind of thing? I was like, oh, y'all doomed. But anyway, so the Reader's Digest had a thing called humor or laughter is the best medicine. And I've seen some cults use it now to get to an ecstatic state. You know, just they start laughing hysterically and then your mirror neurons kick in or something and you start laughing and then you're all in this ecstatic state of psychotic hysterical laughter. Or I don't know if that's medicinal. I guess it could be. People take drugs for religious purposes. Who hasn't? You got to go to, like, it's a really long service, right? You know, headed to a wedding or something. And you go, this is going to be really long. I think I need something to help me out a little bit to make it through, to make it a little more interesting. I think if the clergy was constantly turning into other things, I think that would be good. That would have my attention, and I'd be less likely to fall asleep and embarrass myself. How are you? I'm so glad to be with you today, and I hope that if you are laughing, that it's not fatal. In the series of books by Irving Wallace and David Wadichwalachungski, his son, who changed the name back to the original name when they came over from Australia. They put out a series of books in the 70s called A Book of Lists and A People's Almanac. And they would list things. And one of the things I remember reading in one of them was, and I've said this many, many times on the radio, is that somebody was watching an episode of the British sitcom The Goodies, particularly the episode where they do Icky Thump, hit people with black puddings and everything. He laughed so hard he died. Now, is the spy, the laughter triggered something else, some pre-existing condition, I'm sure. You don't just die of laughter. You know, you feel like you're going to, you can't, I can't breathe, I can't get my breath. And, you know, this guy, I guess this happened, and he wasn't kidding. Dick Shawn, the comedian, died on stage. He had a heart attack, and people thought he was kidding. You know, he, like, grabbed his chest and everybody's laughing hysterically, and he lay there for a few minutes before anybody got any help because they thought, you know, it was a joke. And I remember years later Andy Kaufman cashed in on this by having a gag where he invited this, he showed this film of this the 30s of a young woman riding a hobby horse, and he said, we got the same actress now, and she's like, she's 80-something, she's going to come do it, and he made her do it faster and faster until she appears to die, and funny stuff. So we all laugh at that because we love to see, you know, it's fun to make the elderly do things they can't do anymore, and that makes us laugh. Tim Conway was good at that. Say, look at that, he looks like he has Parkinson's or something, and how frustrating for everybody else who's just fine. So all that makes us laugh. We laugh at that, and I feel sometimes like an outsider, not laughing at some things. And I was told I was too sensitive as a kid. You know, he was like, "Oh, come on now, have a sense of humor." I go, "But that person's being hurt." I don't know. The Three Stooges didn't bother me. I felt like that was in a tradition of clowning that I understood. There was no, it wasn't trying to be real. The exaggerated Foley. I have accidentally poked myself in the eye, and it does not sound like a pizzicato violin string or something, whatever they do. I never get that dissonant interval on blink, like I'd love to. But that doesn't happen, and nor there's not a sort of crunching sound or something when you twist your nose. If you want to create it, though, did you ever do that trick? You kind of grab, take your two thumbs, put them together, put the thumbnails under your central incisors, grab your nose, go up to a child, go, "I'm going to break my nose," and go like that. Did you ever do that? Do it now. Do it now. And I think that you will find that you will become very popular with it. Children love those sort of things, you know, like they laugh at stuff like, "Oh, my eye fell out," or whatever. You come out having a real sense of the absurd, and you don't make a lot of distinction between, you're sensitive and not sensitive at the same time, I find. It was transitioning from that brute child brute into being socialized that I found difficult. I go, I'm going too far with my sensitivity or something. And it's hard to strike a good balance. You know, what's a healthy amount of cruel? It doesn't seems like none, but I don't know. It's probably like mayonnaise, you know, maybe it's just cultural. Some people say, "Oh, zero, don't put any on there." And others say, "No, a little bit's good." Yeah, I don't know how to make those judgments for you. I am but a humble radio talk person who just doesn't happen to be talking to anybody. Why? What's the point? What's the point of interviewing somebody, those talk shows? Today we're going to talk to, first of all, this is the best guest I could get because I don't have any clout, and all the top tier people are looking to sell something, so they just want to go on in big markets, and it's all this cynical mess. We're all promoting our own stuff, and none of it is really for just, you know, our own edification. It's all got an agenda. That said, my next guest is, if you are into a certain kind, really exclusive underground comic books, you're going to recognize this name immediately. If not, you're going to be baffled. And then when I interview them, you're going to be more baffled because you say, "My goodness, nothing I've heard is particularly interesting." It's so specific to their industry, which is a very narrow one. Only five people are interested. I've always thought that maybe I could enter it would be really discouraging to really want to sell out. And you go, you know what, I'm going to aim low. and I'm going to sell out in a musical genre that is really narrow, that maybe you have dozens of fans worldwide, and so you still get it wrong. Is there and it's difficult to do it on a large scale because nobody's that, you know, you have to be really, really talented. And so you have to say, what level of notoriety tolerates the most charlatanism? Where can I be the most insincere and do well? You know, I've always thought about that. What local weather? I don't even know. I don't think so. I haven't found it yet. I love communicating. I love that I have not yet, even at this age, not quite advanced, but, you know, advanced middle age, I have yet to set any goals, either personal ones or professional ones or anything, or spiritual ones. I'm just putting that off. I think it's distracting to plan. Well, not really. I mean, certain things you got to plan, but survival's hard enough, I think. And so I don't have any lofty goals. I don't think they're lofty. I mean, I want to become a god among men. No, that's not even close to one of them. I don't have... I die in my sleep, I guess, is one of them. That's not really a goal. I don't have any control over it. And I'm not even sure how to go about that. I mean, when the doctor said, I don't have sleep apnea, but the doctor, you know, tells you, oh, you might die in your sleep. You go, give me the downside. Because there's some worst ways to go, I think. My goodness. Some lingering ones. What's a lingering one? Immortality. So what's immortality? It's not really. It's just putting off the inevitable. Because all matter eventually gets destroyed by something. Something bumps into it in the universe. There's no way of really staying together. You can't be some kind of immortal cosmic tardigrade where you just stay intact no matter what kind of insult. Even being sucked into a black hole. Eventually, your component parts will be ripped asunder. And then what? Now what? I forgot the name. I forgot our fun backwards name already. I'm glad. I don't want to remember unkind things. I like to have just fun, pure thoughts in my heart. That's silly. I don't know. I don't have thoughts in my heart. If I do have a thought in my heart, it's just da-dunk. Da-dunk, 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 like that. And the more excited I get, the tempo increases, but that's about it. Oh, what if it was actually pumping more blood too? Yes, welcome to high blood pressure. That's what I have. And so it's amplitude, frequency, and, you know, amplitude and frequency modulation, I guess is what I'm saying. Yes, my heart is a radio, and not the company that puts that name in there. Boy, that's discouraging. They do things like that, don't they? A radio is essentially, is it neutral or bad? Just as a technology? Just alone? Just out there? As it bad? No, I don't know. Maybe neutral. But, it can be used to spread hatred or lies or even worse, the truth. Oh, who needs that? So, especially, it's specialized truth. Truth is like when you go to the dentist and you clamp down on some agar or whatever and make an impression to get a mouth guard. It's really designed for your teeth. So a lot of times truth is, though not absolutely relative, is perspective relative. So it's really your teeth. A lot of people use the eyes as a metaphor for perspective or anything. I use the teeth. You are where your teeth are. I don't have any teeth anymore. That's where you are. All over the place. My goodness. My mother kept my teeth for a long time. All the ones that fall out. I don't know if she thought I was going to have them put back in or make a necklace. But she kept them in a little pink tiny box that says my teeth or something like that. And I found it at some point in my adult life, and I was like, I can't throw this away. It's like finding an amputated limb or something. I got to keep this. It's me. So I guess I'm going to stuff it in my breast pocket of the suit that I'm going to be buried in. or my kittel or whatever they're going to wrap me in. I haven't picked anything out. I think that's other people's problem. I'm going to try to not pass away anywhere inconvenient. But, you know, that is whatever you wrap. Bless you. I know you'll make the right decision. And just don't, the one thing I don't want to be wrapped in is like that mushroom cloth. And I know I won't know what's going on, but I don't know that I want mushrooms growing on me. That seems like night. Just thinking about it now generates a nightmare. You see what I'm saying? So I got to know it's off the table, even though I won't be conscious of it. Isn't that interesting? That's how the future can intrude on the present without actually even happening. So it's about possibilities. What you believe is a possibility can haunt you now if you think it could happen. Maybe it never does happen. Maybe the future's already written and that's not true. And yet, isn't that wonderful that an imaginary future or even an imaginary past can affect the present? That's why you should, if you really want to have your mind blown, my favorite science fiction writer is a person named, and they tackle all these ideas in their science fiction. And, it's very complicated. And it all takes place in a bar. What? Yes, so a guy walks into a bar. But it's not a bar. Because there are no walls, just infinite space. And the guy immediately feels an overwhelming sense of isolation, of aloneness. As if he is the only thing in the universe. All alone in this place that is not a bar at all. What is it even serving? And that's a joke. I'm just kidding. There's not really, the guy didn't really walk into a bar or anything like that. Bless you. That's just a silly joke. Like the he had a hat joke. And I've told that before, and Freud wrote that. And now you know. A lot of that came from Freud. And also Edward Bernays created stand-up comedy as a way of selling drinks. Look it up. I don't have to have a whiteboard or a chalkboard or anything, and that's marvelous because I'm on the radio. Even though a lot of people went on to TV who start on the radio start having a whiteboard. You've forgotten your craft, my friend. If you cannot keep your salient points so sharply focused in the mind of your listener that they picture a virtual whiteboard with those ideas or concepts written upon it, you needn't remind them with visual cues. You don't have to show your face to convey the emotion necessary to propagandize whatever it is you're doing. In my case, what am I propagandizing? I gotta think. I don't know. Let's see. What do I believe passionately in? Hang on. No, I do, though. I do. I just can't. It's like when someone says, tell a joke, think of a joke. You've heard so many in your life, but it's just like being on Jeopardy. Your mind goes blank. So the Jeopardy 500, tell a joke. I don't know why. They know that's how they do it to you, too, on Jeopardy. They stress you out on purpose. My friend was a contestant, and she said they pump, like, poop smell in there, like sulfur gas, to get you all off your game and everything. Because they don't want to give away all that money. They have thousands of dollars if you turn out to have just kind of some rudimentary knowledge of the present. Isn't that insane? That great? And we'd love to see it. So I love to see other people succeed and then fail. And that's what those wonderful game shows are about. Sometimes they let you go home success. But I don't know. That just kind of feels empty. It's like a tie. You know, there has to be defeat. And I remember that on Star Trek. Every time that the Star Treks would encounter a planet or some kind of culture that was utopian in any way, Captain Kirk would say, I would remind you that we need suffering and bullies, and we need conflict and war and pain and death. And everybody go, oh my God, you're right. And they would snap out of it. And it's weird that the people in the uniforms, like, it's a wonderful free society. There's four kinds of shirts. You could pick four. There's four colors of shirts that you can pick. And then I think you can trick them out, it looks like, with flair. But on the utopian planets, people are dressed in floral patterns and all kinds of stuff like that. And it's probably reflected on the time. You know, the time is always hippie times. And a lot of people are going, listen, this hippie stuff is too much. Let's get back to our values of wearing uniforms and insisting on rules and things like that, which I'm fine, rule-based. But see, if we're rule-based, why do we also have to be authoritarian? I asked as I was beamed into empty space. It seems like the rules would be enough. We just need judges, not a king. I read that in the Bible. So the Bible's full of crazy stuff. There's a good part, though, and the good part says there's people that are chugging along, and they've got a set of rules, very sophisticated one, laws, and they've got judges. And so they're working things out, like justice is work. You got to figure things out. There's no, it's imperfect. And the judges oftentimes are not the greatest either. And so the people said, hey, we would like a bully king to lead us and be our bully king. Because these judges are just, am I right? Am I right? Congress. So they beg God, and God's like, says to Samuel, that's the, to give you a hint what book it's in, says, all right, give them their king. They're going to love this. And it's, you know, and then it's oppression and torment and everything. But it's our torment, person. Oh, my goodness. It's the way we see ourselves. Just want, please, someone come along and do the hard work of life. Do the hard work of figuring out. Say, it's very unsatisfying to know that every day you've got to refigure things out. But you kind of do in every moment. And that, if you desire true awareness. But if you'd like to be wonderfully comfortable robot person, and that's not a bad thing. I love it. I'd loved when I was in Cub Scouts. No, I didn't, actually. I'm trying to think when I was part of something that was like, yes, this is it. Nope. Can't think of anything really offhand. Some group, music, maybe making music. Somebody's always there to remind you why it's a problem. But there's those moments, you know, when it's transcendent. I hope that I provide them for you. I hope that at the very least, this is like ASMR of somebody chewing cellophane. Like I'm chewing a cigarette wrapper for you. And why is that comforting? I don't know. But, you know, people listen to running water and people typing, things like that. If you listen to all those sounds, the ones that people like to fall asleep to, some of them, I feel, are incredibly annoying. One of them is Benihana chef chopping shrimp with flip, flip. And some people can go, oh, it's hypnotic. Whenever I'm in one of these so-called Japanese steakhouses, where nobody's ever Japanese, they're, it's the wonderful rhythm of that spatula on the grill surface. When they're either doing the rice or making an egg do fun things, and then I don't even know. Everyone's having a good time and enjoying traditional Japanese tequila and catching shrimp with their faces like they're seals or laughing baboon monkeys. I love it. Next time I'm not going to be an ape. I don't know whether I chose that or whether it was chosen for me, but I am not coming back any type of hominoid or apenoid or anything like that. Done. I am done. bird only or something. I don't know. No C stuff either. I'm done with the C. If I was reincarnated, I feel like about 100,000 of them were some sort of shrimp that lives in a vent. And that's why I can't go to those steakhouses, because I'm like, my people. And, you know, it gets into you. And then maybe I was once a whale. I might have been the one. I was a whale in Victorian times. Can you imagine if there was suddenly people like were making candles out of your gut or something? Could be you. I've a whale of a tale to tell you all, whale of a tale or two, about Disney making Moby Dick and a bunch of they did a lot. Disney has made a movie of all your favorite classics, including all of Freud's books, and Civilization and Its Discontents it's a live action, but it's lovely. Joe Flynn is in it. Joe Flynn. I love those kind of things when I was a child. And they would simplify concepts for me, and then I could understand them. If you just understand that Herbie the Love Bug is some kind of philosophical treatise, and see it as such. Oh, give children more credit. They understand more of the world than you realize. Get them to deliver a joke to you, and if they're younger and young enough, you will get a wonderful lesson in Dada. They're closer to the original humor of the universe, which is absolutely absurd. And the absurd delight that a child gets from creating Dada, which is even the origin of the word. There is a sense in nonsense, because everything is experiential. And so if you're experiencing something, then the criteria isn't logic. It isn't that something makes sense. It's your visceral reaction to it, your gut. It's your neurological reaction to a thing. It's emotional. You can't think yourself into a laugh. It overtakes you. And everything does that. You see, it doesn't have to make sense. It can be complete and utter nonsense. Oh, I'm laughing at the nonsense of it all. So that's why I laugh when my friend tells me a horrible story about dying people's elderly dying dogs. And, you know, yep, I laugh like that, like I told you. It's ironic. Of course that's the case. I was naive thinking otherwise. Oh, I try not to fool myself. Sometimes, to make the world more bearable, and I apologize to you, my friend, I have to sort of disregard your suffering, because when I let it in, it's overwhelming. You think of all the things that are going on for everybody. How do I deal with it? How do I make sense of it? How do I not let it wound me? And if I don't think about it, how am I going to help? If I don't think about you because I don't want to be sad and you need me, then what do we do then? My solution is I laugh at you and mock your suffering. No, that's not it either. So I don't know, my goodness. So what I try to think a little bit of it, you compartmentalize it. So I try to let my heart feel things, just not 24 hours a day, enough to schedule concrete actions that can help make the world a better place. So what I do is I let myself feel, and I use the emotions as a motivation to let myself think. You are listening to not the end of the show, because we have a little more time. Not we. It is we. Am I we? I'm a we. The Scottish have it right when they say we. There's a we child, because there really are a couple things going on. One, it's very much like the video game. Two, there's more than one us in us. And it's not just when you say, I can't get myself to stop eating, that dichotomy. You know, there's a lot of voices in there. Some of them are relatives. They sneak in. It's not the whole them either. It's just, you know, it's just Aunt Virginia saying, you look fat. I mean, she's not in there 100%. She's just in there like a cameo. Like, takes a cigarette out of her mouth, "You're fat," or something, puts it back. And there she is, and she lives in there too, and she's just another one of the wonderful patrons into that bar that you walk into, the Duffy's Tavern of your soul. That is an empty place if you don't populate it with others. Go ahead. Make characters of those other voices. Deal with them by confronting them and looking at them and say, "Oh, silly auntie. You couldn't tell fat from something that wasn't fat." Laugh track. That's one of my favorite things in comedy. And you see that in Absurd Things where there's somebody is sort of doing a parody of comedy itself, and they'll say something that's not funny or it's absurd, and there'll be a laugh track. David Lynch did this in Rabbits, and which is also part of that's inserted in Inland Empire, one of his movies. So when there's a laugh track after a nonsensical thing, it's jarring, and it's the stuff of nightmares. Laughter out of context. Laughter when you don't get what the joke is. It's terrifying. I'm not in on it. If I'm not laughing, are they laughing at me? I better start laughing. It's like the, you know, think you should leave a guy in the hot dog suit, you know? We're going to find this guy. All of us need to find this guy. Right? You're just terrified that it's you. Oh, my friend, I am your friend on the radio, just like days of yore when they were on talking about these things. They were quaint back then. Now we have a new type of radio and the internet. And she rehearsed. But I like to be that. I want to be traditional for you, but not traditional. It's very difficult for me to find direction in life, which I still have not found. And you can tell that because I do a thing and that others don't do and aren't clamoring to do. That's what's so remarkable. It's that in my whole, I've been on, if you count every time, like how long I've actually been on the radio from the first time I went, you know, I'm on the radio saying a funny thing on a regular basis. That's 35 years. 35 years. And not once does anybody say, "Hardy, I want to do what you do." And I think that's great. And I got good. Good. There's no competition because it's not a thing. I just like you to know that. And as aren't, and this is going to give you some advice to young people, most college majors. What you're majoring is actually isn't a thing. And I bless you, bless you, bless you. I'm not going to get political about it or say what the origin of it is. Just examine your course of study and realize it may actually not be a thing. If you determine it is a thing and the thing is teaching the thing, you may have be in what, I don't know what they call it. What's it called when the rats start chasing each other's tails in a circle? You know, a rat whirlpool. That has a name. It's horrible. And a rat king or something. So don't become a rat, and one of those rat king disciplines, where the discipline is teaching the discipline, and that it actually doesn't exist in the world. And I'm not going to name any names, but you know. You know who you are because I'm going to get to the top of my profession. Then you go, and the top of my profession is you know, passing it on. Oh, my goodness. Or you could do something like Hardy and say, I'm going to go on that radio. Well, you know, people used to do this. And I think they tell stories, though. I'm trying to think back. After I started, people started dropping names to me. So, you know, you remind me of Bill Schmoppenitz, in the Detroit area in the 50s. Okay. Yep. Same thing. But not, you know, not how you, I think things are, that's interesting, right? Let's say something was big in vaudeville. Let's say you were big in vaudeville, like Roy Smek. But you have to go into vaudeville to see it because maybe Roy Smack wasn't real big in the movies, even though he made one of the first sound movies. Roy Smack, look him up. Or maybe you took guitar lessons from him in New York in the 70s. If you're raising your hand, bless you, if you know who that is and you took lessons from him or even have one of his books. Highly, highly recommended. I don't get any money. But, man, Roy Smack's ukulele book is really sweet. Get it. He's the real thing. Oh, my friends. If I've made you laugh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition on WFM. I don't know where I am. WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in New York City and Rockland County, New York, and online WFMU.org. And that is worldwide freeform radio. And that's what I always say. And you know I always say that. And I'm going to say it again. And stay tuned for more wonderful WFMU radio.
From the first time I saw your face, girl, I knew I had to have you. I wanted to wrap you with my warm embrace. Oh, visions of your lovely face. Sing it with me, yeah. Let's settle down. That's what I want to do. that's all I want. Oh, the
time.